Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Al Franken was at Saturday Night Live from the get-go and for years, then to radio and books, Rush Limbaugh is a big fat idiot, etc. Then to politics, big politics. U.S. Senator from Minnesota, now in his second term, right there in the big Trump-tide hearings, and letting his inner comedian out a little bit again, a little bit. Oh, yeah. He's got a new book out, too, that tells his story. Al Franken, giant of the Senate. This hour, On Point, Senator Al Franken. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you want to know from the trenches from Al Franken now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Al Franken, Democratic Senator from Minnesota. He's a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which has just pre-approved subpoenas to compel former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and the president's son, Donald Jr., to testify next week. And yes, he's got that book out, Al Franken, Giant of the Senate, which chronicles his journey from comedy to politics. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Senator Al Franken, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Are we just screwed?
No, we're never just screwed.
I mean, it just, I just got through an hour talking about the news of this week, and you've got Trump backers who are furious and disenchanted and ready to go to the streets or to throw their hands up. You got Democrats who are just can't stand it for another minute. We look at you and your colleagues in Washington, and it just looks like trenches so deep people can't get out of them. It can look from the outside like we're screwed.
Well, I think that's a little strong. First of all, things change all the time, and we've seen this health care, this attempt to repeal and replace health care, kind of faltering. And I think that what we're hoping for, what Democrats are hoping for, certainly in the Senate, is that if this fails, we're not out of the woods yet on this, but if this fails,
I mean Mitch McConnell's push in the Senate,
yeah, that we will work together to try to shore up the parts of the Affordable Care Act that aren't working the way they should be, and that would be the exchanges, and there's things that have been in ways there have been attempts to sabotage the exchanges, and maybe do a public option, which is if there are counties in this country that don't have the competition, a public option would provide that and provide coverage. And also address the cost of pharmaceuticals. I think every one of your listeners knows that pharmaceuticals have gone up, have spiked the costs in the last 3 years. We pay more for our pharmaceuticals than any other country in the world. We make a whole bunch of them, and we shouldn't be doing that. There's a number of things we can do on that. I have a pretty comprehensive bill on that. So we're hoping that we can take what has been looked like a pretty terrible process and turn it into something, go to regular order, have committee hearings on this subject, and have real experts and people who are been affected by the system testify.
Can you think of what would it take a half dozen Republicans at least to work with Democrats, I guess, or something like that? Can you think of a half dozen of your colleagues in the Senate who would
absolutely
actually, you can?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Lamar Alexander is chairman of the Health Committee, upon which I sit, which is the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. I think he'd be happy to start hearings on how we can strengthen the exchanges. We did that. It was the first hearing we had in the Health Committee in this Congress.
But I thought it was repeal and replace or die was the Republican motto here.
Well, not from every Republican. And also, if this fails, I think Republicans will I think there'll be a lot of Republicans who will be willing to roll up their sleeves and work with us. And we'll have to try to I think that a lot of us on the Democratic side have given a lot of thought to how we can repair and strengthen the Affordable Care Act. We've been trying to do it. The Republicans sort of have been so intent on repeal and replace that they wouldn't work with us to strengthen this. But I think we're seeing now that the final plans from the insurance companies are going to have to come be done by August, and sometime in August. We've got actual work to do in at least giving them some kind of comfort that the cost sharing will continue. So I think the president needs to do that. He changes a lot on,
let it fail, he said this week, or repeal and replace, but he didn't say anything about repair.
He has said many different things at mm-hmm. many different times. So I hope what he ends up with, if this does actually fail this week, is that he'll say, okay, we're going to do the cost sharing, which means a lot. Right now we have health plans in the states putting out two different premiums, one if there's cost sharing, one if there isn't. This is a kind of a technical thing, but basically it's a payment that the insurance companies are supposed to receive under the Affordable Care Act to cost share, and that will bring down the cost to the consumer of the plan. So there is actually in the weeds stuff we need to be doing, not just could be doing, but need to be doing.
You know, you're in there as a former comedian, which gives us some level of trust that you're looking at.
Yeah, couldn't you tell?
No idea. I mean, no laughs there. But you were, and we remember, and that makes us think, well, you're looking at things with a kind of brutal honesty, which is at the heart of comedy.
Thank you.
I mean,
somebody finally understands that.
I mean, that's what makes it.
Tom Ashbrook, a month and a half after the book came out, to finally say that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, then give us some brutal honesty, because it's hard to understand what the texture is inside our political institutions at the moment, the texture of relationships. Some of them, and it's not only on the conservative side, some on the Democrat side too, seem so dug in that there's just zero room for real conversation. You describe some of those in your book, Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. You know, I hate Ted Cruz, you write in there. He's a toxic,
well,
dishonest sociopath.
Let's be fair, Tom.
Yeah.
Let's be fair. Yeah. I say in it, the thing you should understand about Tom Cruise is that I probably
Ted
like...
Ted Cruz. Ted, let's keep Tom over
what did
on
I say?
Tom.
Oh, you're Tom. You're Tom Ashbrook. Okay. Ted Cruz. No, I say the thing I like, or the thing you should know about Ted Cruz is that I probably like Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues, and I hate Ted Cruz. And the thing is, I use him as an example of an outlier, someone who really is a sort of toxic coworker and has not really tried to get things done. Now, he did try to do something on this last iteration of repeal and replace, which, by the way, was awful. It was basically he was saying that we would allow insurance companies to put out these very cheap plans that, you know, that could be junk policies.
So you're saying trying to do something, but not something you like. But
right.
You say he's an outlier. If he's an outlier, then why don't we see more cooperation on Capitol
Hill? There's 100 of us, and if one is an outlier, there's 99 of the rest of us.
Yeah, so what are you guys
and
doing?
And I work with – well, right now we're the majority leader is seeing this process through on health care. And we'll see what happens with that. In the meantime, you know, the HELP committee passed a user fee bill for the pharmaceutical companies and the medical device companies to pay fees so that the FDA can do the, the verification of their drugs or their devices to test them.
You know,
and see
I got
that
all that. Forgive me, but I get that, and it's all important, but it sounds like regular order, and we all know we haven't been in a time of regular order, that kind of conversation.
That was a regular order. That was done through committee. I mean, I think a lot of people don't see the stuff. There's a lot of stuff that gets done that we kind of have to do. You know, you have to keep the government open. I mean, we're heading up to that too.
Yeah.
So,
and sometimes
I mean,
we've
there
kept
are
it open,
things
sometimes
that,
we haven't.
That, yeah, I mean, and that's obviously frightening if we don't keep it open. But I bet you we will. And I mean, that's obviously the least we can do. I can see a listener going like, well,
great.
Thank you, Senator. Yeah. You kept the government going. But there are, you know, I'm not happy with the way things have been going. But the majority is in the majority. And
but do you just glare at each other all the time?
No. And I write that in my book. We have fun. Lindsey Graham, funny guy. When he was, I think, running 15th out of 17 in the Republican presidential primaries, I said to him, Lindsey, if I were voting in Republican primaries, I'd vote for you. And he said, that's my problem. And so he's a funny guy. I get along with a lot of my Republican colleagues. No, we don't glare at each other all the time.
Yeah, but Lindsey is saying his problem is he gets along with you. And that doesn't fly these days. I mean, that makes it...
Well, no, he's saying that if Republican voters in the primaries... he's actually saying that someone who thinks like me isn't voting in the Republican primaries.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah. He needs to be more hardcore to get that vote. And it leaves us imagining this just people with granite faces toward one another. No real...
Well, again, I will say that if you look on the floor, you'll see, on C-SPAN and watch us, you'll see the Republicans and Democrats talking to each other, talking seriously, talking about our families, socially. We do talk and get along. There's only 100 senators. So at a certain point, you have... something in common, which is, I'm a U.S. we're all U.S. senators, and there's some commonality there that we do bond on.
So where's the beef, Senator Franken? We need to see some, something come out of that if that's in there. We're seeing something that looks quite different. Al Franken,
I'm not old enough to know that.
Yeah, I think you are. Al Franken's new book is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate, Democrat of Minnesota. He's with us today. What's your question for the Giant of the Senate, Al Franken? What's the skinny you want to hear on how it's all working or not working in Washington? Al Franken, please stand by there in Washington. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Before we get back to the show, I wanted to tell you to be sure and stay with us till the very end of this podcast for a preview of Freak Out and Carry On. It's WBUR's new podcast that addresses today's politics through a historical lens. Give it a listen, and thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Al Franken, former comedian at Saturday Night Live from the beginning. Now in his second term, making his mark in Washington, laughing a little again, even talked about as a presidential contender out there in some circles. He's out with a new book, Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. And he's here for you, for your questions today. What do you want to ask Senator Franken of Minnesota? Is there anybody who will tell it to you, tell it to us straight anymore? Have you seen Franken in the hearings, on the job? How's he doing? Saturday Night Live days, 1979, on the set of SNL, Al Franken named the 1980s the Al Franken decade. And then here he was a decade later, Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update, 1989, season 15. He was there a long time. As the show ushered in the 90s, Al Franken pondered what to name the coming decade.
Well, it's 10 years later, and I know you're wondering what the 90s will bring for me, Al Franken. Another Al Franken decade? No. No, in the 90s, I'm going to be looking beyond myself, Al Franken, because frankly, I'm worried about the kind of world we're leaving to my children.
Okay, that was those days in Saturday Night Live. These days, here's that confirmation hearing for Attorney General in January. Senator Al Franken asking the nominee, Jeff Sessions, whether he would recuse himself as Attorney General if it turned out the Trump campaign was under investigation for possible ties to Russia. Instead of answering yes or no, Sessions, very importantly, said that he did not had not have any personal interactions with Russians.
If there is any evidence that anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign communicated with the Russian government in the course of this campaign, what will you do?
Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
That turned out to be pretty consequential, and once he was in as Attorney General, he had to recuse himself, or did recuse himself, from even getting into the middle of all that. Al Franken with a kind of a bank shot win there. I don't even know if you intended to get that, but there it was. Got a lot of callers for you. Darla in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, you're on with Al Franken.
Hi, Darla.
Hi, sir. How are you?
I'm good.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Wonderful. Thank you. My question is, does my vote actually really matter? And what I mean by that is I've contacted my senator many times, and my senator is Mr. Marco Rubio, and not once, several times I can't get through. One time I left a message, and every other time it says that this voicemail is full. And I mean, it just seems like no matter where I go, and we travel this country extensively. My husband works for the Department of Defense, and we go to the sub bases all over the country. And everywhere I go, people are afraid their health care is going to go up, their health care is going to be taken away. And I'd like to voice that to my senator. And the follow-up to that is that if my voice isn't heard at that local level, at my Senate level, how am I going to affect the national level where it comes to my president who's trying to cater, which I feel to is a small group of people who want Obamacare gone and a large group of people who want it improved? Thank you.
Well, Darla, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Your voice, your vote really matters, and your voice matters too. We do record every interaction that we have with voters. They write letters, they write emails. We get lots and lots and lots of emails. We answer calls at the both in St. Paul and in Washington D.C. I ask my staff that's answering those calls what they're hearing. It makes a big difference. And of course, your vote makes a big difference. We saw this presidential election decided by really just a very, very small amount of votes in three states. And it makes an enormous difference. I mean, I can, from my own experience, I won by 312 votes in the 2008 election.
Can't get squeaky and, that. Yeah.
So I know a lot of volunteers in Minnesota who knocked on more than 312 doors and or made more than 312 calls or gave me $50 to get on radio to reach more than 312 people. And boy, it makes an enormous difference. And thank you for what your husband's doing and what. And keep doing it. It makes a difference.
But what Email. Really gets through? She doesn't feel like it's getting through. What really gets through
understand.
To you?
Does
someone have to clutch your hand as you get out of the van, you know, and speak to you direct? What really gets through ultimately?
Well, it depends what your senator, obviously, Darla, is from Florida,
yeah.
And there are, I don't know if Marco has town hall meetings, but if he does, you can actually go to his office. He must have offices throughout the state of Florida. You can go and make your opinion felt. Do it in a good way. Do it in a nice way. I suspect that Darla would. Really, you know, or become an advocate. And that's one thing I tell people all the time is that if you care about clean water, if you care about housing, if you care about mental health, if you have an issue you care about, become an advocate for it. And you'd be surprised how quickly people will go from being a foot soldier to being, you know, a leader in these groups, and how important those are. When, you know, I take these meetings all the time with stakeholders from my state in my office in Washington and in St. Paul.
Darla, it sounds like you may have to step it up there to get your senator's attention. It ain't beanbag, as they say. Nancy in Lexington, Kentucky. Nancy, you're on with Al Franken.
Yeah, hi. I'm an independent conservative, and mm-hmm. I think I speak for a lot of people that what I see happening is, well, for one thing, the health care, the Obamacare didn't work because the government has, with all the entitlements, made it actually more affordable and allowed people to, who could be working, to not work and stay home and take advantage of the system. And so that the divide between the poor and the rich is getting bigger and bigger, and basically the middle class is getting the life sucked out of them. As my insurance went sky high and my deductible went sky high, and I never did get to use my insurance during the time I had Obamacare. And that Congress now, and which I don't really like Donald Trump either, but he is president, and I think that he's proven he will work with people if they talk to him. But to me, the Democrats, their only goal is to bring him down and to keep the Russia thing going, even though there's no proof, and to resist, you know, they the propaganda to resist everything. I mean, what is that? I mean, why can't Congress work together and compromise and help the country, not just to bring Trump down because they don't like him? I mean, why can't you try to work with him? And it's just very, very, very frustrating to me. Every time I turn the news on, all I hear about is Russia when there are other things going on.
Al, Senator Franken, what do you say to Nancy?
Well, Nancy, I think you do speak for a lot of people. I mean, I don't agree with you on a number of things, but let's take them. You covered kind of a wide swath of area. Yeah. For example, I'm on the Rural Health Caucus. I'm the co-chairman of that. So I go around Minnesota and go to rural hospitals and rural nursing homes and clinics. And they hated both the House bill and the Senate bill, all these different iterations of these bills, precisely because it would gut Medicaid. The people who are getting Medicaid aren't people who are sitting at home and on the dole. These are working people. And what we did was expand Medicaid so that it covered people, you know, at 138% of poverty. But
I mean,
those
some
are a lot
of people. Not everybody is working people who's on Medicaid, right?
Not everybody. No, there are people certainly that are a lot of people on Medicaid are nursing homes. Nursing homes cover 64% of people in nursing homes. Those people aren't working. Those are the patients in nursing homes, not the people working in nursing homes. But people in nursing homes may be on Medicaid themselves because they have their pay may not be sufficient. In Minnesota, we have this thing called Minnesota Care, which is up to 200% of poverty. There are people who are disabled who benefit from Medicaid. A lot of people there, and they may not be working because they're disabled, or they may be working and be disabled, but may not be above a certain income level, so they get Medicaid. Children, there are a lot of children who benefit from Medicaid. Yeah, those children aren't working. These may be, you know, if you meet with people who are on Medicaid, I meet with them both in Minnesota and here in D.C., we've seen the help that Medicaid has provided to people. That I had a woman in Perm, Minnesota, at a round table at a hospital. Now, all the rural hospitals, all the medical associations, they're saying, do not do this. Do not cut Medicaid the way the Republicans are talking about, because we will have to, in some cases, have to close. Now, I had a woman at a round table who, she works, her husband works. And she was crying because she knew that the home health care for her mother, which allows her mother to stay in her home, is provided by Medicaid. And she fears that she will lose that. And she and her husband don't know what they would do with her mother. I think Nancy said that she didn't use her Affordable Care Act policy while she had it. I hope that's because she was healthy and that she was good. But what we need is a system here in the United States where people get health care when they need it. And what we've seen through the expansion of Medicaid is really good results. And Atul Gawande from Harvard, a doctor who is also writes for The New Yorker and is in the World Health or big plays a big role in the World Health Organization, did a piece in the New England Journal of Medicine, co-wrote it, a survey piece looking at all the different studies about how the Affordable Care Act affected people. The people who the extension of Medicaid meant that people got regular health care, and that what improves people's longevity and life and quality of life isn't these big emergency heroic events. It's getting continual care throughout your life from a doctor. It's basically primary care, and that is like with diabetes or any of these kinds of chronic conditions. Having insurance means having regular primary care, and those people do much better, and Medicaid has been incredibly helpful. But this is a big, long, complicated subject. I know, Nancy, that there are people that feel your way, and I think it's partly the fault of Democrats who haven't reached it. We have not reached out, and we need to go to where Trump voters are, and they're everywhere, of course. But I know there are people in my state who are Franken Trump voters. They voted for me in 2014. They voted for Donald Trump in 2016. And I go there and I listen. That's one of the things I like to do. And I like to listen to Nancy.
Senator, I'm guessing that you didn't persuade Nancy just now. I mean, she called you with this complaint, and you basically lecture her that she's wrong.
No, I don't think that was a lecture.
Well, it was a long explanation that your perception is not correct, and that people have these needs, and we're trying to address these needs. And she's saying, "I'm middle class. I'm being sucked dry, and I've got the impression that we've created the wrong incentives in this country." And you tell her about Atul Gawande, who writes The New Yorker, who's a great guy, but. Do you really think that and maybe Nancy voted for Trump? Do you think you just brought her over, or do you not? Is that just not going to happen?
Well, you and I have a different. I was talking, so I wasn't listening to myself. Maybe, but I think that I was embracing, especially toward the end, some of her saying that you have legitimate.
But the Democrats lost the presidency and they lost Congress, and I'm really curious about if and when they may ever get those back, how that would happen, and what I just heard seemed unlikely to persuade a lot of Trump voters, or maybe even Nancy herself, who have this angry sense of disempowerment or that things have been tilted away from them. Is there a way to bring her back into the fold? Do you think you just did it?
No, I don't think I did it on your radio show, Tom. But I think that she might have heard me speak and say, "Oh, okay. At least he acknowledged that some of the vote may have been the report of the fault of the Democrats, and also he addressed my Medicaid." My understanding of Medicaid with some alternate facts, as they might be called, except my facts are. I actually was speaking about. That's why I brought up Atul Gawande in the New England Journal of Medicine, because we do have to deal with facts. We do have to deal with data. We have to deal with science, and there's no other way. That's how I talk about things. And if people don't also like with talking
politics,
about those.
Right? Also with politics and people's perceptions in a democracy. And, you know, the Democrats lost the White House and both houses of Congress.
I understand that. But I won my election by over 10 points after having 10 percentage points. I won my reelection comfortably because I think in part, and it was in a really, really rough cycle in 2014. And I think it's because I do try to speak in ways, one, that are authentic to me, which is I do study and I do take these things seriously. So I try to talk about the science. I talk about all this in my book in terms of how I approach my job. And my job is to work to improve people's lives. That's what Paul Wellstone talked about. I dedicate the book to Paul Wellstone and his wife, Sheila. And, you know, he said politics isn't about power. It isn't about winning for the sake of winning. It isn't about money. It's about working to improve people's lives. And I want Nancy's life to improve. And I want Darla's life to improve. And I want the people that are listening to this broadcast to come away thinking, okay, I'm going to listen to Al Franken the next time I hear him. And I'm going to read his book.
Al Franken, giant of the Senate. Al Franken, stand by. U.S. Senator Al Franken is with us. The book is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour with U.S. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota. Now in his second term in the U.S. Senate, former comedian, of course, there at the beginning with Saturday Night Live. Second term now on Capitol Hill and out with a new book, Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. You can join us. What's your question for Senator Al Franken? We've seen him in the spotlight in hearings lately. Sometimes it's deadly serious. Sometimes it's kind of funny, maybe inadvertently. Things a little bit awkward during a confirmation hearing for Secretary of Energy in January. Al Franken asked the nominee, Rick Perry, thanked him for meeting him in his office prior to the hearing, and the former Texas governor got in some double entendre territory.
Governor, thank you so much for coming into my office. Did you enjoy meeting me?
I hope you were as much fun on that dais as you were on your couch.
Well,
may I rephrase that, sir?
Please, please, please. Oh my Lord! Oh my Lord!
Well, I think we found our Saturday Night Live soundbite.
Okay, but it's not always so fun. This was Al Franken, Senator Franken, trying to steer the director of Federal Bureau of Prisons, Charles Samuels Jr., away from discussing statistics specifically to focus on the human element of solitary confinement. In a hearing on prisons, Franken appeared to have stumped Samuels when he asked him if he knew the size of a prison cell.
We've got a lot of statistics. How big is the cell?
The average size of a cell is, I guess I'm trying to, you're looking for the space of what the...
Yes, the dimensions in feet, in inches, the size of the cell that a person is kept in. I want to get some idea of, I don't know, am I asking this wrong?
No, and it wasn't really funny. It's tough when you're there. Al Franken, our time is short, and the stakes are large here, no matter where people come from politically. And we want to hear your jokes, but we really want to hear... You're right in the middle of Washington right now. Democrats trying to figure out what happened last election. Republicans looking at where they're going to be going in the future. What's your simple analysis? Why did Donald Trump win last fall, and why did Hillary Clinton lose?
Well, boy, that's a long one. When you say we don't have much time now, but Senator Franken,
you got to boil it down. You got to take a lesson away from it.
No, you do. You're in radio.
Democrats have got to come up with a way, and so I'm interested in someone thoughtful like you.
Well, I
what you're coming away from it with.
Well, as I said, I think one of the things we have to do is show up and where Trump voters are. It tend to be rural areas, and I'm a Great Lakes state, Great Lake industrial states, and we have to go there and listen to people. I think we need an economic message that appeals to people. Talk about creating jobs and what creates jobs. I think that we have to talk about healthcare. I think that it's pretty clear to most Americans, to a great majority of Americans, that what the Republicans have been talking about was actually taking away insurance and care for low-income people and to give a huge tax cut to those at the top. And that's certainly not, I mean, Donald Trump said he'd never cut Medicaid. And so I think that part of our message has to be that we're the ones that are working for working people and people aspiring to be in the middle class. I open my book about why I'm a Democrat. Yeah, yeah. I'm a Democrat because my dad didn't graduate high school. He was a printing salesman. I grew up in a two-bedroom, one-bath house with my brother and parents, and I felt like the luckiest kid in the world because I was growing up middle class in America during the 50s at the height of the middle class. Mm-hmm. My wife grew up very differently. Her father died when she was 18 months old, in Maine, in Portland, Maine, leaving her mom widowed with five kids at age 29. She had only a high school education. They made it. They made it because of Social Security survivor benefits. They went hungry. They had their heat turned off. But they made it. And all four girls went to college. My brother-in-law went into the Coast Guard, became an electrical engineer because of that. My mother-in-law, when the youngest one went to high school, she got a $300 GI loan. Her husband was a World War II vet, mm-hmm. and she went to college on that loan for a year, and then she got three more loans. She graduated. She became an elementary school teacher. She had all her loans forgiven. Mm-hmm. Well, they tell you everyone became a middle class, a contributing member of our society. They tell you in this society, that you, and we all believe this in America, that you have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but first you have to have the boots. And the government gave my wife's family the boots. And that's why I'm a Democrat, because we believe that we are working for people in the middle class and working people and people aspiring to be in the middle class and aspiring to have a good life. Working 40 hours a week and working for their families so they can send their kids to college.
Why did Donald Trump win? Why are you the minority in both houses of Congress?
Well, we have an electoral college system is one of the reasons he...
Always have. Democrats have won many times there. They didn't last fall.
Yeah, no, of course. But he did not win the popular vote. I'm just pointing that out.
He won the presidency.
He did. Very good.
Why?
Yes, he did. And as I said, I don't think we communicated with those working people well enough. I don't think we communicated with those people who feel like for the last 40 years they have been squeezed and that they are angry about it and have a right to be angry about it. We do have a different interpretation of how the country, how the system is rigged, if you want to call it that. I think we do have a different interpretation than Nancy who called, probably more similar to what Darla who called. Mm. So we're going to have continue to have that argument, but we're going to, in the meantime, have to show that we have policies, whether it is about having after-school programs for kids who have nowhere to go after school, whether it is about creating jobs through, you know, we have far more jobs in renewable energy and solar and wind than we do in coal. And so we have to show that what we're talking about not only is addressing climate, but it's actually about real jobs. And so we need to show up to those and listen to those voters and have a conversation with them and tell them what we're for. And I think that as we've seen the Trump administration thus far in its first 6 months, that it ain't what they advertised.
Four special elections, Democrats lost them all.
Yeah, in very, very, very Republican districts, in Montana, in mm-hmm. Kansas, mm-hmm. and in Georgia, and in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And those margins were much, much smaller than they had been in the previous, just a few months earlier. So there are a lot of seats that are there that were Hillary won, or where the margins were much, much, much smaller, that are up for grabs in 18. But right now, I'm not focused on 18. I'm focused on now. I'm focused on fixing the Affordable Care Act if this doesn't, if they don't succeed in this next coming week. And I'm hoping that we will be able to address infrastructure, put people to work. I believe that three things create wealth in this country. They are infrastructure. Dwight Eisenhower knew that. Their education. Dwight Eisenhower knew that. And their innovation. And Dwight Eisenhower knew that, and so did a lot of other people. Those are the things that drive us, and we need to be investing in those things, but we need to put people to work so that we have a 21st century infrastructure so we can compete globally and create jobs here in the United States.
Alex in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. You're on with Al Franken. Thank you for calling, Alex.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Senator Franken, thank you sure. so much for the work you do. Thanks for your book. I read it. It's amazing.
Thank you.
My question is, I try to be as involved as possible in the Democratic Party, and something that's starting to happen, I think, is we're hearing that we should try to separate ourselves from the National Party. Is that something you've heard? Is that something you agree with as far as local politics go?
Why are they saying that, Alex? What's the rationale for that?
My assumption would be that a California Democrat is a lot different than a Kentucky Democrat. So trying to get those middle-of-the-road voters by kind of distancing yourself from, say, the more liberal points of view.
Well, you know, Tip O'Neill famously said all politics is local, and there's a tremendous amount of truth to that. In Kentucky, when you had a Democratic governor, you took the Medicaid expansion, and it really, really made a huge difference in Kentucky. I know that Kentucky is one of these states where you have local Democratic officials. We've mainly been getting senators, Republican senators from Kentucky. But sure, no, I think that you should, your state is your state, and your congressional districts, your congressional district, and your county and your community are, and that's what you should be focusing on. I think sometimes Democrats have really been too focused on presidential politics and not enough on, you know, on city council and mayors and school board.
Still, it's going to be big messages that come out here. Yeah. What do you think is going? You're going to come out with the new Democrats coming out with the new some new messages on economics and more very soon.
Right.
I think as soon as Monday. Should it be
right.
more progressive, Bernie style? Should it be more middle of the road, Hillary Clinton style? What are you for?
I'm for an American plan that helps our economy. And that's what we're going to be starting to announce on Monday, and I don't want to step on it, but it will be about economic, about building jobs, creating jobs, and about economic opportunity and security for people who are in the middle class and aspiring to be in the middle class.
What does that say to a Bernie Sanders supporter? Do you have something to offer them or not? They weren't satisfied with Hillary Clinton and her middle-of-the-road positions.
Well, Bernie sits in our caucus, and he's weighed in on this package, and as all of us have. And there are things that he definitely is, very supportive of, and he's represented in this package, absolutely.
Charles in Bass Harbor, Maine. Charles, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Senator Franken.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. First off, Al, Senator, I'm looking forward to reading your new book, and I really
like
some of your other books, especially Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot. It's a great book. Anyway, I'm a Mainer, and I'm good now.
My wife's a Mainer, yep.
I'm from Portland, right?
From Portland, yeah.
I'm smart enough. Only people like me.
Thank you for remembering.
I'm scared, nervous, and scared and depressed about this whole Trump administration. I'm obsessed with the news, and I was wondering what if Richard Smalley were around today, what kind of advice he could give to people like me to add a little levity to our lives about the political situation.
If Richard Smalley were around.
Stuart Smalley.
Stuart Smalley.
That's okay. He had the slogan. Stuart doesn't come out, hasn't been out since I started running. But he would, I think there are a lot of people, believe me, who right now are everything this gentleman said, which was anxious, afraid, you know, and he also said he was kind of a news junkie. Maybe sometimes you want to take a break from that because this is very disconcerting. We've also had worse times in our politics. Been reading a book on the 68 election, and my goodness, during Vietnam and assassinations, and that was the year Nixon won, of course. You know, put this in some perspective. We're a strong nation. We have strong institutions. I believe in the process we have going forward on these investigations with Bob Mueller, and I have some oversight responsibilities. I'm on judiciary. We have a hearing next week in which we have called Mr. Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. Hoping they will come. And
you've got
so
a subpoena ready
have,
if they don't say yes, I guess.
Yeah. Sometimes people have refused to show up with subpoenas. We'll see what happens with that. But meanwhile, I think that the subject right before us right now that's very urgent is healthcare. And if this Republican effort, which I'm very much against, does fail, I think we have to turn our attention very much to making sure that we strengthen the system that is in place. And we have, you know, and part of this investigation is also about Russia, is obviously about Russia interfering in our election. And we should be really focused on not allowing that to happen again. And that is something to be very anxious about. You know, we talked a little bit, Tom, about the 18 elections, and those aren't so far away. We need to be able to make sure that they're not hacking into state election and local election machines, et cetera. So we have a lot of work before us. I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I'm here in the Senate. You know, a lot of people ask me, is being a United States Senator as much fun as working on Saturday Night Live? The answer is no, of course not. But it's the best job I've ever had because I get to work every day to try to make things better. And so I hope all your listeners, that can be a takeaway from the way I view my job.
A sober Senator Al Franken with us from Washington today. His new book is...
I've never had a drinking problem.
Fully sober. Al Franken...
And I don't mean to sound defensive about that.
No, not at all. Not at all. Thanks for being with us, Al.
You bet, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Ron Suskind.
And I'm Heather Cox Richardson.
We're the hosts of Freak Out and Carry On, a new politics and history podcast from WBUR.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for this preview from our show. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Freak Out and Carry On wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a listen to this excerpt. We chatted about Trump's approval ratings and historical parallels. And I guess my question is, when was the last time you had a president arrive into office and summon this sort of open, vigorous public protest?
Well, it was the presidency that everybody comes to first whenever they think about American history, and that was the presidency of Benjamin Harrison.
Oh, of course. I mean, the stage play, I love that, and the musical they did. It's fabulous, yeah.
Everyone always forgets about Benjamin Harrison, and there's a reason for that. He gets written out of history, but it was a very similar situation. A person who came to office after a Democratic president, Cleveland, who was popular among people who wanted reform, wanted to make sure the government did not work just for the very wealthy. Harrison said that he would make some reforms, including to the tariff, did not win the popular vote, lost the popular vote by 100,000 votes. Gets put in with the Electoral College. As soon as he gets in, it's very clear that there's been hanky-panky going on. People are infuriated by that. They start to protest, and Harrison and his men keep saying, no, 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 we've got this. We know how to make America work again, how to bring the economy back, although it wasn't actually that bad right then. He puts his son into an important position and simply refuses to note that there is these protests going on, that people are literally starving out in the West. And he completely misses what's happening out West, which is, again, this huge protest that becomes the Alliance Movement of 1890, which takes over the House of Representatives by a margin of 2-1 that year and virtually flips the Senate. And Harrison is completely blindsided by it.
Right, and drives politics forward from that point. I mean, in a way, the reaction to Harrison becomes the defining thing of that
period.
That's
exactly right, and that's where we get the populist movement, and again, the progressive movement grows out of that at the turn of the next century.